Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I am Ryan Wormley, joined today by Scott Bogman from all over the place and by Andy Behrens of Yahoo Sports. Andy, I was just saying before the show, I've been saying this all week, it is a very busy time of year, but it is also the most fun time of year. I think a lot of fantasy analysts would agree that August, while it might be the busiest month of the season, it's so much fun, fantasy draft day. How has August been going for you?
It's good. Like, once I actually get into, you know, my more familiar drafts, the hometown drafts, things like that, then it gets really fun. Like, the preseason's a little bit unpredictable. The sort of behind the scenes fantasy gig thing is that it's actually like, you know, I'm just trying to get to the regular season, right? Because I don't know what somebody's going to ask me to do, like, tomorrow, today, whatever, during the preseason. But it's really fun once we start, like, draft season. Once you start getting into the drafts in your leagues that have been around like 15, 20 years, I love it.
Yeah, when we're entering the second half of August now, which is when most of those drafts are. Boggs, how many drafts have you done so far, either mock or real? How many do you have under your belt this offseason?
Well, mocks too, we're probably talking 30 or 40, you know, because I've done so many mocks. We do them for ITL. I do them for a lot of other shows as well. So probably 30 or 40, but right now it's the sheer amount of slow drafts that I'm in that is slowly giving me gray hair because, you know, it's, did I miss this league? Did I miss that league? I got to make sure this league is starting today. What are the time windows? They're all different. Some of them are 4 hours. Some of them are 8 hours. So it's that stress right now. But like Andy said, once we get into like regular sit down, do your draft all at once time, that is when it's really fun. And I feel like once we get to the season two, it's more structured. Sure. Right now, like Andy said, you don't know, you know, you're going to get asked to be on shows and articles and all kinds of different stuff. But it's it beats digging ditches, man. It's a lot of fun.
Can I just say, because I'm like mired in a couple of slow drafts right now, that there's no feeling in fantasy like like being sniped on a player after just looking at his name for like 36 hours, right? Yeah. Like it's just happened to me this morning. And I'm still sick about it. I'm gonna be thinking about it for a week.
It's a pain everybody can relate to.
It's a
slow draft. Well, we will not be slow on today's show. We will get here quickly through our 10 RB3s that we think are ready to make the leap. Before we jump into the show, I just want to ask everybody, go ahead, give us a review, Apple Podcasts, you know, wherever you listen to your podcast, anywhere else, go ahead and throw a 5-star review on there. It helps us get out to more people so we can help more people dominate their leagues, hopefully not your opponents in your leagues. But like I said, we're talking about RB3s that are poised to make the leap this year. Kind of a nebulous topic. We're definitely going to be talking about some guys that are more maybe RB4s, RB5s, and also making the leap is kind of nebulous. It could mean jumping into RB1 territory. It could mean a every week starter. It could just be a guy that we think is undervalued right now that we like a lot. I didn't give a lot of rules on this one, and yet the first guy Andy is talking about, he still said he felt like he was cheating, even though there were no rules here.
Yeah, I feel like I'm cheating on most of these, honestly, because the first guy I'm going to talk about, I would probably actually draft as an RB2. And then later I'm going to talk about like an RB4, an RB5, an RB6, stuff like that. So like, I feel like I'm not exactly in the range here, but technically, according to the list that I was operating off, I get to talk about James Cook as an RB3. I don't think he should be an RB3. I have him actually pretty close to Ramondre Stevenson in my ranks. I don't see a whole lot of difference except that Ramondre has done it already. No shortage of camp buzz around James Cook, obviously. You know, we saw him in the preseason opener. Not that it means much of anything, but he did stroll into the end zone for a pretty easy short rushing touchdown. Also been just a ton of talk about Josh Allen reducing his rushing responsibilities this year. If that happens, it's clearly good for all the running backs on the Bills. It's especially good for Cook. I don't know that he profiles as like an every snap running back. They certainly didn't talk about him that way after drafting him, right? When they like immediate press conference after drafting James Cook a couple years ago, they talked specifically about him in a pass catching role. And yet here we are, he's very clearly the team's RB1. He's also like, he's pretty good. The guy averaged about 6 yards per carry over his final 8 games as a rookie. He looked a little lost, I think, in the first half of the season, and that definitely corrected in the second half of the season. Again, I've got him ranked like right around RB20, RB21, something like that. I feel like he's that guy that every time I look at him, I bump him another slot in the ranks, right? There's not much of an argument against him at this point.
How much higher do you think he's going to move up? Like, we're sitting here on Labor Day, and where do you think he's going to be ranked if this training camp hype continues? Because you're right, it has been kind of a groundswell of, like, he does look like the RB1. Damian Harris has been kind of banged up a bit. Where do you think he ends up right before the season starts?
Yeah, maybe this changes if Damian Harris gets healthy and, you know, we start seeing him in preseason action. He's really a part of the, you know, the sort of varsity offense for that team. That could change. I also feel like James Cook is going to be one of those guys who's like, he goes in one place in like hometown drafts and like normal drafts, and he goes in a very different place in industry drafts, right? There's a lot of enthusiasm for him in leagues that contain mostly experts and hardcore players. I don't know that your work, but your, you know, your eight person work league, I don't know that they're ever going to get there necessarily. But there's always like three people ready to have a skirmish over James Cook in pretty much every draft I've been in.
You guys had a bit of a skirmish in that it was the only name you both picked on your list for today. So yeah. Boggs, I'll give
that's
you
why I felt like it was cheating,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like he's.
I didn't change my tune on James Cook until we got to camp, because I thought exactly what Andy had said is, you know, well, they brought in Damian Harris, who's a 200 touch guy. They never really talked about him as an RB1 style running back. But then the first interview at camp, he's like, well, obviously I'm the number one back and everyone else. And I was like, that doesn't sound arrogant to me. That sounds like a guy that has been made some promises. And it's pretty clear that he was made those promises early. He worked on, you know, fulfilling his end, and now they're letting him have it. So I have moved James Cook up my board significantly recently. And I think from these reports, you know, I don't like to change too much once we get to camp, but when I hear direct quotes from coaches and players, not beat writers is mainly speculation. They're closer than we are. I do respect their opinion, but I don't change my rankings based too much on what they say, but the players and coaches, that's where I put my focus in. Hearing that and then seeing how he's been working with the ones, he was in all of those first team touches and all that stuff. He scored a touchdown in that first preseason game. I am high on James Cook as well.
Yeah, by the way, the list we are going off of is the expert consensus rankings, half PPR running back rankings, where he currently sits at RB28, so definitely outside of that top 24 spots there. Bogman, give me your first guy you want to talk about.
All right, give me Isaiah Pacheco as a guy that can take the leap. Pacheco was RB18 from week 11 to the end of the season in PPR leagues, and I expect him to be more involved in the passing game this season. McKinnon had 10 touchdowns, which doesn't really seem sustainable. Kelsey had a career-high 12. That is sustainable, but will he do it again? The expectation also is that Pacheco, who says he'll be ready by week one, is going to be more involved. His pace from week 11 on would give him 255 touches. And I think giving him 255 touches somewhere in that range, 250 to 275, being a bell cow for the best offense in football, is a place where I want to draw my players from. I want to take shots in Kansas City. He's going as an RB3 right now. A lot like Andy said with, you know, drafting him as an RB2. I have done that in many spots. So I am high on Pacheco, and part of it is talent, but part of it is also the pieces around him and knowing they're going to score a lot of touchdowns, and there should be more opportunity for him to get in the end zone this year.
I think it's a reasonable stance. I mean, obviously reasonable. I agree that Pacheco is the running back that you would want in this offense. Do you think the gap between where he's going and where like McKinnon is going and Edwards-Helaire are going is too wide maybe, or you think it should be 30 spots apart in the rankings, Boggs?
I think it should be. I think he's by far the best back on this team. I think he surpassed CEH, who I liked coming out, but just has not put it together. McKinnon has a role, and he will definitely be there and be involved in this game. And maybe Denarik Prince, he's making a little bit of noise. That's what we got from Pacheco last year, right? Maybe he has a role as well, but I think they like what they have from Pacheco, and I think they're going to lean on him a little more this year.
The next thing I'll say,
Andy, let's go to your next.
Well, just to piggyback
on that,
The nice thing about investing in this offense is obviously that it's going to average something like 30 or 35 points a game. And we've seen plenty of, you know, you can go back to Damian Williams being like the most important player to have in fantasy a few years ago down the stretch, right? Like, we don't even need him to be a bell cow or anything close to it. We don't need a full workload from any particular Chiefs back in order for them to like just live in the end zone, score every week. Like, we've seen it time and again. You give the right guy 10 touches, 12 touches for this team, and they go off.
Before we get to the rest of today's show, let's take a second to talk about Air Medcare Network. We talk a lot about what makes winners on this show, and there's one thing all the teams, coaches, and players have in common: preparation. Planning is key in everyday life, too, and a great way to be prepared for the unexpected is to join Air Medcare Network, America's largest air ambulance membership network. Air Medcare Network providers operate state-of-the-art helicopters that can respond to critically ill or injured patients who need emergency medical transport. These flights can be very expensive, but as an Air Medcare Network member, you won't see a bill for your flight only when flown by one of their providers. That's right, you would pay nothing. You can become a member of Air Medcare Network for just $99 per year. And right now, our listeners get up to an $80 MasterCard or Amazon e-gift card when they join and use offer code FANTASYPROS. That's Fantasy Pros with no spaces. Make financial peace of mind part of your game plan. Visit airmedcarenetwork.com/fantasypros. Andy, let's stick with you for your next guy.
Yeah, this is a lovely pairing with we're going to end up talking about a couple of Bears running backs here. I want to start with Khalil Herbert, who I wasn't even landing a ton of Khalil Herbert until fairly recently. I will say, first of all, I don't think the Bears are going to have one guy, and I don't think they're trying to have one guy. I think the Bears, like most other teams, like maybe 26 other teams, are not trying to just winnow the backfield down to a single player. They're not going to do it. But man, Herbert has just been so good with the ball in his hands. I think people know he averaged almost 6 yards per carry last season, which is just stupid. He's always looked the part. He looked the part, you know, first time he actually got on the field for appreciable snaps a couple years ago. He's already got like the long preseason touchdown to his credit. So he's got the sort of viral preseason clip to boost his ADP perhaps a little bit. Hasn't been particularly active as a receiver to this point in his career. And I would say the biggest worry with Khalil Herbert, and the thing that probably makes him a guy who only, I don't know where his snaps cap, if it's like 60%, 50%, something like that. But he's had some really, like, he hasn't just struggled in pass protection. He's had some really ugly moments in pass protection. And obviously for the Bears, keeping Justin Fields upright is going to be probably the key to the season, certainly the key for the offense. But again, Herbert, the presumptive lead back right now. I think Foreman sees the field. I think Johnson sees the field. It's an extremely run heavy team, obviously. And I think he is definitely, Justin Fields aside, I think he is the most explosive player in that backfield.
Andy, do you, when you're looking at any offense that has such a mobile quarterback like a Justin Fields, do you see that as more of a benefit for the running back in that there'll be more wide open running lanes theoretically? Or do you see it as a detriment because running quarterbacks tend to not check down as much? You miss out on some of that passing game work, and also they'll steal some of those rushing touchdowns.
Yeah, I see it. It's funny for Herbert. I don't see it as a negative because I don't think he's going to be on the field in very many obvious passing situations. Because again, he's really had some pass protection issues,
brutal,
right? So like, I'm not banking on Khalil Herbert catching 35 balls, 45 balls. That's not part of the appeal. The appeal is entirely, you know, let's get this guy 175, 200 carries. I know those are going to be really efficient touches. I know he's really good. I know he's going to get every yard that is there and more. So like, that's the appeal here. And I think that Justin Fields obviously has, you know, a certain amount of gravity, right? That makes that just sort of tilts the field a little bit and makes things a lot easier for the running backs in the running game. I don't think that there's a player here who's likely, you know, there's nobody in this backfield who's going to catch 50 balls though.
Well, the next guy we're talking about from Boggs is another guy in the backfield. As you mentioned, we're in the Bears section here. So, Boggs, you're talking about Roschon Johnson here. I just have to ask, is that because you're a Texas guy, or do you actually believe Roschon is the guy to target in this backfield?
Well, look, I am a Texas guy, and I love Roschon, but I don't think anyone really knows what Roschon's ceiling is because he was outshined at Texas. I mean, this dude came in as a quarterback. switched to running back his sophomore year and has been a great running back ever since then, but he has lived in Bijan's shadow. So what he was at Texas was a closer, if you will, a guy that is enormous, that runs downhill and hard against gas defenses that have been chasing Bijan and company around the whole game. Now here's this Hulk, you know, Derrick Henry size back coming through to run down your throat. That is what his job has been. And because he's big and because he's a former quarterback, he has already been impressive, as all the coaches and beat writers and everyone at Chicago has mentioned, in pass blocking. So like Andy mentioned, he immediately has a role in pass blocking situations, 2-minute situations, receiving situations, stuff like that as a running back for this team. But I don't know. Like, I don't know how good he can be because he never was really given the leash to do it. So this is an investment that is much cheaper than Herbert. And I do, you know, everything Andy said about Herbert is correct. And I do think that Herbert gets the first crack to be the main guy in this backfield, but he has obvious deficiencies. I love Deontay Foreman, another Texas guy. But, you know, he's a step slower than Roshan and more than a couple steps slower than Khalil Herbert. So if you're looking for a thunder lightning in this backfield, I think it's Roshan with his pass protecting and it's Herbert as the speed guy. And I think Roshan could work himself into a bigger role. And he's super cheap right now. I believe when I looked last night, his ECR was running back 55. So you can get him at the end of, especially those workplace leagues. And Andy was talking about before, no one's even heard of this guy. So you can take him in the very last round. So I like investing in Roshan because there's the opportunity is there and the potential is there. So it's two things I like to have when I'm taking my late shots.
Andy, is it at cost that you would maybe change to Roshan, or you would like Herbert, even though he's going higher, even over where Roshan's going?
Herbert is one of those guys that I actually think is really cheap for the evident talent, right? So like if I can get a guy who I think is, I don't know, is Khalil Herbert one of the 25 best ball carriers in the league? I think he actually might be.
Could be.
I think he can house almost anything. So I kind of like him. I kind of like them all at cost, actually. Like, nobody ever fights you for Foreman either. And I think at various points, they're all going to have a role. I think clearly there's going to be injuries at some point. I will say, as you were talking about Roshan, he is not unknown. Like, where I am locally here, Chicago, like, stylistically.
Well, you're in Chicago,
people
yeah.
People love running backs like this, right? Because he is ending runs with violence. And people just love that. I don't know if that physical leads to a long career, but he's super fun to watch.
Andy, let's stick with you. We're in a little rookie running back run here for the next couple of guys, and you've got one down in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I had drafted Tank Bigsby virtually everywhere until a few days ago. I'm in Canton, Ohio for the King's Classic, and all of a sudden I've got competition for Tank Bigsby, which really disturbed me. He's been like my favorite fantasy flyer for the back half of drafts, I don't know, for a month. He probably already has the short yardage and goal line role for a Jaguars offense that I think we all think can be really, really good, right? Really, really tough runner, great at Auburn over multiple seasons. Obviously, he's been one of those guys who's gotten consistent buzz in training camp. He's been sort of a viral clip guy, particularly as a receiving threat, which is a little bit of an unknown for Bigsby. I also just think he's like, and this isn't, I'm not even like knocking Travis Etienne. It's not like I wouldn't draft him. I think he's the very clear number one. I just think that Bigsby is a perfect complement to Etienne, and everything that Etienne struggled with last year, like those seem to be like really exceptional traits for Bigsby, right? So this is a really nice one too. I think he's going to have standalone value, and then I think, of course, he's also going to have like very high contingent value if anything were to happen to Travis.
Yeah, and Tank is a guy who like was playing on a not very good Auburn offense, so he was the focal point in a lot of those, you know, scenarios where he was excelling in college. He will not be the focal point of this offense now, you know, not by a long shot. So I'm really excited to see what he can do with a little more room to operate and a little less defensive attention on him. Before we move on with today's show, let's take a second to talk about Rival Fantasy. They're launching their season-long leagues later this month. Mock drafts are available now for registered users to test the draft platform and get in on some preseason draft action. Then on August 30th, Rivals Season Long will launch. Leagues that sign up, fill, and draft before the start of NFL Week 1 will be entered to win league prizes up to $1,000. DFS games are already live for preseason NFL games. New users can get up to a $200 deposit match when they sign up at joinrival.com/fantasypros23. You can play DFS, mock draft, and manage your season-long leagues all in one place. Rival Fantasy is the all-in-one fantasy sports platform, and this NFL season is the perfect time to get started. Don't get left behind and wondering why everyone keeps talking about fantasy bingo. Sign up today. Again, that's joinrival.com/fantasypros23.
Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan we do over 3 whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Nikki Glaser Podcast.
Her roast of Tom Brady stole the show. Now she's talking about it on the latest episode of the Nikki Glaser Podcast.
I said, tell Tom Brady that I'm the Tom Brady of roasting.
Lots of people roasted the goat, but only Nikki is still being talked about.
Every time I refresh my DMs, it's 14 blue check marks of people I didn't even know who knew me are writing like paragraphs to me.
Hear that in all episodes of the Nikki Glaser Podcast on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search the Nikki Glaser Podcast to start listening.
Like I said, we're sticking with the running backs here. So who's your next guy, Boggs?
Let's go with Zach Charbonnet, another rookie here. And I like Tank Bigsby a lot too. I'm more of a Travis Etienne fan, but it's not hard to squint and see Tank Bigsby get some run. But for Zach Charbonnet, and I've said this and I believe it, Ken Walker is the better back. I have said that. I believe it. But I will say that the gap isn't enormous. Charbonnet displayed himself as a feature back at UCLA. He averaged over 23 touches a game last season, and that was with 3.7 receptions per game. So he's not a slouch in the receiving game as well. 14 touchdowns last year. He's a bigger back than Walker, so that could give him short yardage goal line carries already. And the Seahawks, look, they've got a lot of receiving talent, one of the better receiving rooms in the NFL right now. You add a talent like JSN, you have DK Metcalf, and a grizzled vet like Tyler Lockett, who does not play like a grizzled vet. He's still very, very good. And what Geno Smith did last year was incredible. But we've seen when the run game doesn't work, when the pass game doesn't work, Pete Carroll is a meritocracy. We are going to go with what works. We've seen his offenses be first, second, third in rush attempts. We've seen them be very high in pass attempts under Russell Wilson and last year in Geno Smith when the run game was banged up and not really working that well. So it's going to be whatever works. And if this run game gets going, they're going to rely on it first. Or if Geno Smith takes a little bit of a step back, I know we're all in love with Cinderella Geno from last year, but we had a decade of some bad play before that, it seemed like, or somewhere in that neighborhood. I'm not saying he's going to turn into a pumpkin, but maybe even if he takes a realistic step back to mediocrity, you know, I think we could see more involvement in this run game. And Charbonnet, yes, he's behind Walker, but still could see a significant amount of carries. And if he's getting those goal line carries immediately, could be a pretty good value on your team and a guy that could make the leap. We've seen him do it at UCLA. He could do it for the Seahawks as well.
Yeah, this backfield's so interesting. So I want to get your opinion on it too, Andy. You know, by the end of the year, assuming health for both guys, what kind of breakdown do you expect to see between Charbonnet and Walker?
You know, this is really funny because we just we're just putting together like a collaborative piece at Yahoo where we have to talk about our hardest player to rank. And for me, it was Walker, right? Because like, if you just told me to, you know, lay out your draft board before the NFL draft, I think I might've had him at the back end of round one, like start of round two, right? I was really excited for Walker. And now all of a sudden his range of outcomes is anywhere from, you know, he could still be that guy. Like, I think he's good. he's good in a weird way that we can get into in a second. So like, I think like the peak of his range of outcomes is incredible. But I think we also have to recognize that his floor, even in a healthy season, is that he falls into like the lighter share in a platoon arrangement, right? Like that can definitely happen. Cause I think one of his issues as a runner last year, and he was obviously great for fantasy, and the stats were always there, right? Like he closed the season really strong, even when he was hurt. I do think that he was like a sort of a big game hunter a lot, right? Like he plays for the long score, and
breakaway yards, yeah.
And he got him. Like, so to his credit, he got him. He always found success almost every game. But that is his approach, and I do just wonder if you know Pete Carroll doesn't sometimes sit there and seethe and be like, just get the 6 yards, you know? I feel like that might be a thing. There's a clear opening for Charbonnet here, so I think they are very difficult to rank. And I have like, you know, so then I land with Walker was sort of a placeholder rank in the early 20s. And I've probably got Charbonnet too low because I do think that Charbonnet will see the field. And maybe by the end of the year, it looks like a 50-50 thing. I don't know. If I had to peg it, I guess I'd call it 50-50. That's surely wrong, though. Because I feel like Pete doesn't like that either, right? Like, I feel like, well, you know, there will be periods where one of these guys is getting 75% of the snaps and then the other guy is getting 75% of the snaps. That feels very possible to me.
Well, I think that's a really interesting point where, I mean, I would have also said, you know, Walker, surprisingly a boom bust player, you know, from run to run at the very least. I hadn't really thought about the fact that that's probably not the type of guy that, you know, Pete Carroll really would like to have in his offense. He seems like
he likes Marshawn classic. Lynch. He likes a big like physical guy.
Moving exactly. Stay on schedule on every offensive drive. So that is really interesting. A kind of a contrast between Walker's style of play and really what we see Carroll's vision as. Andy, let's wrap up our rookie running backs discussion here with the guy who went latest of all of them, of the guys we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm just totally cheating here because I wanted to talk about the guy. He might be an RB7. I don't know. Like, you just take it with your last pick. This isn't somebody that people fight you for. But I think that Chase Brown was so, like, during the lead up to the NFL draft, I just thought he was so underrated, underranked. Maybe it was the mileage he had as a college player. I honestly don't know. I can tell you that there were definitely not five better running backs in college football last season, though. There's you could never convince me of that. He just didn't miss in any week. And he was also like, he faced a couple of the country's absolute best defenses, right? He put up, he gave Iowa everything they wanted, 140 yards against Iowa. He gave Michigan everything they wanted, 140 yards against them, touchdowns. Like, Chase Brown was just good at Illinois, start to finish. Definitely passed the eye test. He's also like, coaches love guys like this. He's like an extra try hard guy. That's a lot of the buzz around him in camp. I can't imagine him not landing the role as that team's number two pretty quickly. Even if he's not quite there at the start of the season, that is definitely happening for him. And I also think that we've seen Joe Mixon slip a bit. I thought young Joe Mixon was an incredible runner, and I don't know that we saw that like immediate elusiveness last year. And I also just like they ran Samaje Perine a lot last year. Like, there's a role for a second guy in Cincinnati's backfield. And I really think by the end of the season, that might be Chase Brown.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wanted to follow up by asking, do you think this is a pure, like, the ceiling's going to be crazy high as a handcuff if Mixon goes down or whatever? Or do you think there is a spot where Brown can contribute to your fantasy team? He is going as a late RB6, by the way, so not quite an RB7. He's RB7 here. but would you say there's room for him to contribute? Yeah. I mean, it's got to be pure value if he does anything for you that late, right?
Sure.
Or do we need a Mixon injury or something to happen with him for Brown to really shine?
Well, I mean, we certainly need a Mixon injury for anybody to really take off. But it's, you know, there was a, and he's not, like he doesn't have the experience, obviously, that P. Ryan does. P. Ryan is a total pro, could do anything you ask him to do. And so I don't know that Chase Brown slides into any sort of passing down or 2-minute situation. Like they might feel more comfortable with a vet. But man, I also can't believe that he's not going to at least be a rotational runner for that team. I was just like, again, it's one of those situations where in the pre-draft process, I was just stunned not to see Chase Brown as a top 4, top 5 back. I don't know what it was. Maybe it's just that we get caught up in combine numbers. Like, there's a lot of really talented players in that draft class, but man,
it was the size.
Yeah,
that's it.
I mean, he's
just so productive, though.
He just
but those guys have, and I hate it because I won so much money from Chase Brown last year betting Illinois in the under. I mean, you just take Illinois in the under, and like I did all these write ups last year for betting pros on why I was taking Illinois. But to boil it down, I could have just wrote Chase Brown defense. Like, that was all it was.
Right.
But a lot of people in the draft process have thresholds, and if you don't hit that threshold, you are just below it. And for a lot of guys, it was like hand size and height and all that stuff. He's a smaller back. I do not care. 300 carries against teams like in the Big Ten against Michigan and Iowa and stuff like that. What more do you need? It's on film. So I don't care about thresholds when it comes to that stuff. So I'm with you for sure on Chase Brown, Andy.
Yeah, I didn't think he was going to be like a day two pick or anything like that. But I was really surprised he fell.
He's lost a lot of steam. He's lost a lot of steam too, because you know Joe Mixon didn't get cut, and that was the big like, you know, 2 months ago it was like, well, it's all kind of sneaky, take Chase Brown because Joe Mixon might get cut, and then he had this court stuff which he, you know, was found not guilty on today, I guess. So good news for him not getting suspended or anything. But yeah, I mean, he had to take a pay cut to stay in Cincy too, so like all the stuff was pointing towards him going out the door, but he has juked his way out of that, and he's still the starter in Cincinnati. So
yeah, he faced some good defense in the Big Ten. He didn't have to face my Maryland Terrapins last year, of course.
Oh, but well,
we know we should.
As a Texas fan, I'll never make fun of Maryland. They smoked us twice. Yeah,
you have no right to after those back to back Terps Doves. Bogman, let's go to your number four guy.
Give me Antonio Gibson. And for me, the excitement about Antonio Gibson, which I already loved him coming out of Memphis as a wide receiver and making the transition to running back, it was, you know, kind of a bigger jump than most players have to do, but he just picked it up and did it. But the addition of Eric Bieniemy as the offensive coordinator for the Commanders makes me really like Gibson more this season. You know, last year, in the last couple of years, he's dealt with like Carson, the ghost of Carson Wentz, and Taylor Heinicke as his quarterbacks. Those guys don't put fears into defenses. I don't know that Sam Howell is going to do it, but when Gibson was a lead back and had 300 touches in 2021, it was facing stacked boxes, and the short passes went to JD McKissick, right? So McKissick is gone, and I don't know that Howell is the answer. I think Bieniemy will at least scheme up his best players like Gibson, McLaurin, Dotson to make plays in space, and that's what Gibson's role was at Memphis, and I think that's what his role should be too. This is not a guy that has to live on volume. He lives on big plays, but when you're facing stacked boxes and your offensive coordinator is not scheming up you to make plays in space, it's not going to work. I think a lot hinges on Howell unclogging the box and making throws downfield to give him a little bit of space to work with. Because if he doesn't, then Brian Robinson should be the main back for this team because he is better between the tackles, more elusive as a running back in tight spaces. But I think Gibson is just the better player, the more explosive player. I think having Bieniemy here is going to help him a lot. And he's getting drafted as a, you know, low-end RB3, I feel like, right now. I know he's moved a little bit up since we started the process here, but not enough to me. I really like Antonio Gibson, and I think he can make a big leap if given touches and some space to work with.
Well, I think one of the most, like, just, like, all-time most unfair perceptions that I've ever seen, like within the fantasy community, related to Antonio Gibson a couple of years ago, when people seemed dissatisfied with his efficiency level of production, when the man was playing on a broken leg, right? Like, that guy played through like a stress reaction in his leg for us. And no, he wasn't the most efficient back while playing on a broken leg, but like the
against stacked boxes. Yeah.
Like the NFL itself gives you a lot of credit for doing that, but I feel like fantasy players really soured on him after that. And man,
give
like,
me my points. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what else do you want the poor guy to do? Like, I thought that was super admirable. And we should have definitely taken it into account as we, you know, as we evaluate him going forward.
Well, I think it's funny that you brought that up because I was going to ask, you know, are we maybe discounting Brian Robinson a little too much in this backfield because he was playing shortly after getting shot in the leg last year? And I've heard a lot of people say, well, he's really inefficient. So this is Gibson's, you know, backfield to take it and run. But I wonder if Robinson, now a full year removed from being literally shot in the leg, might actually be a little bit more effective of a runner. Because I know last preseason there was some real hype for him, right, Boggs?
Yeah, I mean, higher elusive rating, better yards per contact, more missed tackles force than Antonio Gibson last year as well. Like, I think if you're just looking for an all-around back, Brian Robinson is a better back, but I want a guy that's going to make me some big plays, and that's Gibson. So I think it'll be closer to 50-50 in this backfield than it should be either one of these guys getting a bigger role. But I mean, you know, the passing, so with McKissick being gone, even if Antonio Gibson's only role is as a third down back, he could turn that into an RB2 with that amount of touches as well. So, you know, he's not a guy that has to have a million touches because he makes big plays.
Andy, let's stick with the NFC East for your last player.
Yeah, my last guy is somebody that it's almost unfortunate that he's had some camp hype and some beat reporter hype lately, because I was getting a lot of Kenny Gainwell early. I feel like we should have always regarded the Eagles backfield as a pretty murky three-headed committee. And instead, all the people who have always been all in on DeAndre Swift are still just all in on DeAndre Swift, right? And we've turned him into like a fourth or fifth rounder. I don't think it's that clear. And then, of course, a lot of the context clues from camp and a lot of the, you know, there's been some talk from beat reporters that it's actually Gainwell who is seeing far and away the most time with the first team in camp practices. I actually don't want to put everything on that, because you don't know what they're working on in camp, right? They could just be like they run a lot of like 2 minute stuff.
Well, they said that Gainwell didn't play in that first preseason game, right, Andy? Because he knew the system, and that everyone's like, well, look, Swift is starting and blah blah blah. But he's already played in this system. He doesn't need any preseason.
Yeah, he certainly doesn't need it. So we shouldn't read a ton into that stuff. I do just think Gainwell's a pretty good player. And again, I think they're both going to get run. Like, I think DeAndre Swift is fine. I think we've overstated a little bit his sort of superhero, like, to the moon ability. I don't know that we're ever going to see that from Swift. I just think they're going to give Gainwell a ton of touches. And if this ends up as like two guys get 40% of the touches and one guy gets 20% of the touch, like, that feels right to me. That feels like what it might actually be. Also, by the way, like, Gainwell was a monster at Memphis, yet another Memphis back that we're talking about. Like, that guy, that guy finished with a 2000 scrimmage yard season, 50 catches. Like, there's not a lot of stuff he can't do. I think he's definitely going to be part of a two-headed, three-headed committee in that backfield. And I think they're all good. Like, it's a great offensive line. It's just great team context generally. I think they can all, they're like, I feel like they're all going to be flexes that we might get an RB2 out of it. But I feel like we've slept on Gainwell long enough. That's probably changing. But he needs to be a lot closer to Swift in the ranks than he has been to this point.
I'm looking at your Yahoo rankings right now, and you currently, at least as of the last update, have him one spot behind Swift, and you have him 13 spots ahead of Penny. So you have Penny as kind of the.
Won't have to worry about Penny after week three when he's hurt for the year. I mean, come on, you know.
Yeah, probably not. A lot of mouths to feed, but yeah, obviously a super efficient, explosive offense. Bogman, take us home with your number five.
I'm going to go with AJ Dillon. I might be breaking news here, but I think it's pretty safe. It's a pretty safe assumption that the Packers will run a little more with a first year starter in Jordan Love than when replacing a future Hall of Famer like Aaron Rodgers. So they were still under, I think, the meridian here. They were like 18th in pass attempts last year, but still, you're going to run the ball. When you have guys like Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon, you're going to run the ball a little bit more. So for me, it's AJ Dillon. I think he's a little underrated. It, you know, Likely to be more rushing attempts. He's an unrestricted free agent after the season. They paid Aaron Jones. They have no reason to limit his touches at all outside of Aaron Jones. It's just a better back, and I agree with that. He is the better back, and he will get more touches. But Dylan, you know, he's not a threat to make huge plays, but he's had a top five run grade on PFF the last couple of years. He's had 300 touch seasons at Boston College, and that was yet another guy that we're mentioning here, like Ken Walker, like, he was the whole offense. Everyone in the stadium knows who's getting the ball, and he still runs through defenses. That was Kenneth Walker at Michigan State. That is A.J. Dillon at Boston College. So, you know, a guy that can face those nine-man boxes and not flinch and run through those guys and force a lot of missed tackles sheerly because of his size is something to see. I'm more excited about A.J. Dillon next year, hopefully winding up with a team that could really use him. Tampa Bay, by the way, Tampa Bay, you could really use A.J. Dillon. I think that would be a perfect fit for him next year. I think this year there's a chance for him to have 250 touches. And if anything happens to Aaron Jones at all, sky's the limit for this dude. He is an absolute closer and will be running ragged over some tired defenses in the fourth quarter because this dude's got stamina. A lot like Roshan and a lot like Ken Walker. These guys that have just a different level of stamina. Also, you know, not something that's really easy to measure, but if you watch a lot of football, you can see it. You know, Ken Walker running over gas defenses like Michigan in the fourth. A.J. Dillon did it every week for Boston College. Dude has just a different level of physicality to him, and I'm excited to see what he can do in Green Bay with potentially more attempts and even more next year, where if he looks good this year, he could be a bell cow. So I'm excited for A.J. Dillon's future.
Andy, it's such an interesting offense. I just want to ask you about Jordan Love quickly. Like, how good do you think he will be good enough for this offense to be good enough for the RB2 to be a successful fantasy pick?
Well, I think that the greater point, you made it earlier right off the bat, they're going to run more. They almost certainly have to run more, right? Like nobody expects Love to deliver a halfway decent Aaron Rodgers. Maybe a decent impression of last year's version of Aaron Rodgers, but that's it. I don't think
if they're throwing a lot, it's late because they're losing. Like that is the pathway for Jordan Love getting more. Too many pass attempts, most likely.
I think it's probably a pretty good defense, too. Like, I think they're just one of those teams where the plan is probably, we would really like to hold you to 17 points and run it down your throat. I actually also think that, you know, I think Dylan's a great value. I think Aaron Jones is one of the most screaming values on the board. Like, he goes like, RB16, RB17. He never finishes there. He's always been a top 12 running back. Like, that's been the case for like 4 years. He's definitely going to beat his ADP. It's just kind of a weird price right now.
So we sneak in an actual RB1/RB2 in there for you. But those are
again, I literally hit everything from an RB1 to an RB7. Yes. Oh man!
quick recap here: the names we talked about, in addition to all the extraneous ones: James Cook, Isaiah Pacheco, Khalil Herbert, Roshan Johnson, Tank Bigsby, Zach Charbonnet, Chase Brown, Antonio Gibson, Kenneth Gainwell, and A.J. Dillon. Boggs and Andy, thank you so much for making the time. Again, super busy time of year, but super fun as well. For Andy and for Bogman, I am Ryan Wormley. We'll see you guys again next time.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/FantasyPros.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're going to love season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.